You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on a Tuesday morning, August 19th, 2025. It's a foggy but beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. And if you're joining us in some other way, shape, or form on social media, through Facebook or YouTube, through the app, by podcast, on the website, however you got here, we appreciate you starting your Tuesday morning right here. I got a question for you. What is your superpower? That thing that maybe you take for granted, a particular skill or something that you have, but that really comes in handy. And it just might be, you know, your chocolate chip cookie recipe. It might be how handy you are with anybody's car trouble. I've just learned that mine is in tech support. I really ought to open up a help desk. I should move to India right now and open a help desk, as I'll describe coming up in just a bit. On the program today, we're going to visit with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area. We'll discuss how Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is coming to Western Wisconsin to help one of the Democrats trying to unseat Congressman Derek Van Orden. We'll look into whether Congressman Brian Steil is signaling a willingness to help President Trump kill mail-in voting. You know, that thing that's used safely and securely by hundreds of thousands of Wisconsin voters. Trump, meanwhile, not only is attacking mail-in balloting after Vladimir Putin told him up in Alaska that it's not a good thing to do. He also yesterday hosted Ukraine's president, which was strangely missing the red carpet. It was missing the military flyover. It was missing the ride in the presidential limo. Didn't it seem a little out of balance? And yet we're trusting him to bring a fair and balanced peace to Europe. Okay. We'll also talk about how Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Bradley is being criticized for accepting tens of thousands of dollars in trips during her time on the bench. We'll talk to former state legislator Fred Clark about how ridiculous certain Wisconsin politicians looked in sending a letter to Canada to complain about, you know, their country burning down. We're going to fact check the people who want to blame everything other than a changing climate for everything that's changing in our climate. All of that and more along the way. We'll get an updated forecast, see if this fog is supposed to linger for very long. And as always, we invite you to follow us and to comment. Civic Media app is one of the best ways to reach out to us. Just pull up any one of the radio stations where you're hearing us and use the text feature there, and we'll see it and maybe put your comment up on screen. But of course, we are on Facebook for both Up North News and Civic Media, and YouTube for both Up North News and Civic Media. So you can reach us that way as well. You can email us radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Up North News is a separate entity from Civic Media, but it's a partnership we sure do enjoy on these weekday mornings from 6 to 9. You can follow my team over at upnorthnewswi.com. And you can follow the producer of this shindig, Parker Olson, down in Madison Studio A2, by simply listening to him right now when I say, Parker, what are you up to down there in Madison Studio A2? How are you?
Not up to much. I'm just trying to figure out exactly what time Fred Clark is coming on, because I actually was not aware of that. But that's okay.
Did I not put that in?
It's not in my rundown.
Oh,
goodness. But it's okay. I see he'll be on at 7:52. Is that right?
In our Way Up North segment, yes.
All right.
Which somehow I neglected to put on your little piece of paper. So
you know, good.
I get the important stuff in there.
You know. You do. It's more important that you know these things than it is that
if,
I do.
If I get again, like I said last week, I just want to get the songs from the history lesson in there. If I get that,
that's true.
Because otherwise, that's a whole lot of time to tap dance.
That's yeah. Oh, fool. We'd have to sing the songs ourselves, Pat. Can you imagine?
And I don't even know that our license covers that. So it's better this way, that we actually queue up the records.
Yeah, I think the people will be happiest with that.
Wouldn't it be fun if we actually had the records?
That would be fun. You know,
when was the last time you played a record? When was the last time you actually put a needle on a record?
I myself never have. We had a show at our college radio station in Whitewater, though. We had two record players, I think, actually, in our studio. And we had a show. I think it was called For the Record. And they just played records and talked. I never listened to said show, but I'm told it was great.
See, again, I can't believe it's now ancient history. It certainly doesn't feel like ancient history to me. But when I was working at the UW-Eau Claire College radio station, you know, the first thing that you would do before, if you were doing a music shift, as opposed to a news or a talk shift, if you had a music shift, and, you know, we all took turns with that too, you'd go into this other room, you know, it's your typical office, you know, about the same size as the room that you're in right now, Madison Studio A2, maybe 10 feet by 10 feet, roughly, something like that. And it's, you know, got shelves all along it. And it was just filled with albums, you know, like going into a record store. And we would just go through and just kind of pick ourselves. What songs do we feel like playing today? Yeah. Which always gives you the false sense of that's what radio is, that it's just a jukebox. It's one of the first things that Professor Bailey had to say to us at UW-Eau Claire is, you know, a radio station is not your personal jukebox. But it was for those shifts.
You just pick
the records that you wanted to play. And played them, and then you made sure that you put them back afterwards. You cussed if the if the needle skipped because somebody else didn't take as good a care of the records as you would. But they were there, you know.
Huh.
They were there to play, but no records for you.
I knew that swearing at your equipment was a very regular part of radio, but I wasn't familiar with that particular instance.
Swearing is an absolutely essential part of broadcasting, except in the broadcasting itself.
That is true. It is a very ironic thing.
I learned to swear working at the UW-Eau Claire College TV station, where as a beginning camera operator, you'd have the headset on, the director is giving you cues, and the director found all kinds of colorful ways to tell you that you were screwing up. I mean, it was impressive, the words that I learned. I want to say Mike Tomchek was his name from, like, Pittsville or something like that, but don't hold me to it. But oh yeah, I learned some language, let me tell you. And you learn to be extremely aware. When we talk now about people sometimes say things and they don't realize there's a hot mic, they don't realize that they're on social media or whatever. I guess I understand it, but and I did this when I was running for office as well. They're like, oh, you got to watch what you say. I'm like, I always watch to make sure that, like, there's not, if you see a microphone within 50 feet of you, you just assume it's on.
Yeah.
You know?
Pretty much. I was talking with somebody I think I was in A2 in the production side of it, and was having a conversation with somebody, and I went, I don't normally swear when I'm around a microphone. However,
I'll make an exception occasionally when you know, at least you think it's not on, but you never really know for sure.
That's true.
In that whole guest rundown, I also failed to mention Dan Hagen from WJFW NewsWatch 12 will be joining us today as well. So should I add that name to your list as well?
I got that one. That one I know.
The
regular ones I always know.
You know the regulars?
Yeah, I've got that. Okay. Hey, that is seared into my brain at this point.
Good. Okay. Sounds good. Let's talk Brewers and Cubs. There was supposed to be a doubleheader yesterday, making up for an earlier rainout. They did play game one. You know what happened to game two?
There was no game two.
Yeah, it was rained out. Let's see. Tony on YouTube. I remember the first time I heard Pat curse. It was shocking. I was used to radio Pat. I don't remember the context in that, Tony, but I can understand.
I bet he remembers.
If you've only, you've only ever heard somebody in one frame, it's a little weird to hear.
It was a traumatic experience for Tony.
Yes. But hey, game one of that doubleheader yesterday, that was a lot of fun.
The little I saw, yes, it was very fun.
Oh my goodness, 7-0. Brewers, look at that. I mean, Freddie Peralta, 6 innings, 1 hit. shutout ball. First pitcher to 15 wins on the season. What is he now? 15-4, I believe. I'm sorry, 15-5. The Brewers improved to a Major League Baseball best 79 wins, only 45 losses. Now, they snapped the 14-game winning streak, so now you kind of get that, you know, we've won so many of the last so many games. So since the All-Star break, there have been 28 games.
Okay.
28 games since the All-Star break. The Brewers have won 23 of them. They're 23-5 since the All-Star break. And let's see, there were home runs by Bryce Durang and Caleb Durbin in game one. And the Cubs fans, they were not happy. They were not happy with all the Brewers fans, because usually it's the other way around. You know, they always joke that American Family Field becomes Wrigley North. Well, this was definitely American Family Field South yesterday. And it felt good. And so then there was that very satisfying pause after game one. And you're like, oh, let's do this again. And then the rains came. And
yeah.
Just washed it all away. So we are on the same schedule as yesterday when there was a doubleheader, a day-night doubleheader. So last night's makeup game will be done this afternoon. So again, pregame at 12:45 across several Civic media stations. And then there'll be a pause after the day game, and there will eventually be the evening game, and the pregame there will start at 6:30 on several Civic media radio stations.
And I do think that both of these games will actually happen today.
Yes, I believe we have chased away enough of the clouds here, shall we say, to get something done. So here was the question I put off the top in terms of what's your superpower?
Yeah.
I learned last night, and I've learned this repeatedly, first with my late dad and now with my mom as well. I can do tech support for the elders.
Really?
Over phone. You know, you think, oh, there's no way I'm going to be able to describe this. But it turns out I was able to describe it so that when my mom called to say that her Bluetooth speaker was not working, it's the Bluetooth speaker, she calls it her big hearing aid, because all it's connected directly to her TV. And so she can't hear the TV from across the room. So she's got this Bluetooth speaker on the little table right next to her recliner. And that thing is blasting, let me tell you. Well, they had a power outage yesterday in her neighborhood. And when the power finally came back on, it had become unpaired. And at first I thought, there's no way I'm going to explain Bluetooth pairing
to this
80-year-old woman. And yet I tried. I said, well, there's this little thing hanging off the back of the TV and then this little button on the speaker. And, you know, she's like, I can't push both buttons at once. I said, no, you don't have to. You know, you push the one, then you go over and push the other, and they're both in pairing mode. They're like lovers running across the grassy field toward each other, and eventually they pair up. And I had no idea whether she could. I was expecting a call back going, I can't. Your sister's going to have to come and fix this.
Yeah.
And instead, phone rings a couple minutes later. I'm like, oh, here it comes. She's like, I did it. I was like, this is great.
That's impressive. That's impressive, yes. On both ends of that, actually.
I was. I said, you know, Sherry said to her mother-in-law, you are the most technically accomplished 80-year-old in the Twin Cities right now. Congratulations on that. So good on her. But it's one of those things that I've been able to help. I have no mechanical skills whatsoever. But I can provide some tech support. I mean, I typed up Sherry's papers when in college because I knew typing. And now I know Bluetooth pairing. So I got that going for me.
Wow.
And I can talk, and I'll do some more in just a moment, right after I tell you that from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, I thank you for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
It's 6:35. Nice to have you along here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News. You can find our work at upnorthnewswi.com, a part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy newsroom. We have so many weighty matters we could discuss. There's the Trump-Zelensky meeting. There's Trump going after mail-in voting. There's a sitting Supreme Court justice being criticized for booking all kinds of travel that's paid for by right-wing, you know, think tanks and things like that. And I want to get to all of that, but right before the break, we learned that somebody born in this particular century was not familiar with the phrase New Coke and the controversy over the time that Coca-Cola changed its formula way back in the olden days, you know, 1984, 85, something like that.
Oh, God. Okay. I was under the impression this should have been, this is something I should have maybe known about. You're saying this
is something you should have.
This was 84.
This was like one of the big, when, I mean, this would be like me not knowing about World War II, even though it happened 20 years before I was born.
Pat, okay? If we're this comparing World War II to New Coke,
I
can't.
This was on a World War II basis in terms of pop culture and the things that we ingested with our bodies. And when Coca-Cola decided that Pepsi was such a threat because Pepsi was growing and Coke was looking like the old stale product. And so they completely changed their formula. They changed the formula. Imagine your favorite beer just deciding, we're not going to be that beer anymore. We're going to be something else and we're going to call it that. That's what Coke did, thinking we're going to be, you know, now we're going to be new and fun and everybody's going to love us. And nobody loved them. It was the greatest corporate marketing disaster. It made the Edsel. Well, you don't even know what the Edsel is. Never mind.
Nope.
there's got to be something. I don't know. I'll come up with it later. And finally, after a few months, they had to rebrand it as Coca-Cola Classic and bring back the old formula. And the new formula went away until a couple of years back with Coke Zero, which is not exactly the same as New Coke, but close enough. And it's why I drink Coke Zero every day, Coke Zero Sugar, because I'm one of the few freaks that loved New Coke back in that spring of 1985 when this all took place.
So what you're telling me is Coke just ditched their...
They just ditched Coke and said, here's some new ingredients put together in a cola, and we're going to call that Coca-Cola. You look so confused. Like, how would anybody do that? And that's what we said at the time. How would anybody do this?
That's such a stupid thing to do.
Tony, not a fan of Coke Zero. Well, that's okay. You know.
Hey, you know what?
Alicia says, I was too little, but I did hear about it from my mom.
That's great.
She used to be a huge Coca-Cola lover, and she tried New Coke and hated it, and I never heard the end of it. You see? And it's you know, they made it way sweeter. Because, again, they were trying to compete with Pepsi at the time.
Huh.
And you like what you like at the time. I mean, look, at when I was in college, I drank so much Mountain Dew. I mean, I can hardly touch Mountain Dew now.
If the worst thing you drank in college was Mountain Dew, good on you, Pat.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, these energy drinks. Do you drink any of the energy drinks that are out there now?
No, I don't. As you may have caught on, I'm not a big caffeine guy.
No, but you're not. You and your water, and that is to be saluted. And yet we mock it anyway because that's what that's our trade in stock here. But
that's
yes,
fair.
It's a good thing that you do that. But yeah, I look at these energy drinks and I can't fathom having more than one of them.
Yeah.
And I'm a little surprised more people don't just drop dead on the sidewalk as a result of ingesting these things.
I knew people. One of my roommates in college had more than two, I think, a day.
Oh,
for a minute, which was a problem.
Can't be good. Yeah, Alicia saying the reason I like Coke is because Pepsi is just too sweet. And you got to love the reactions of people in restaurants. And the way that the waitresses always say it, or the waiters, when you order a Coke or a Diet Coke, and they always say the same thing, is Pepsi okay? Like they're apologizing in advance, like, is Pepsi okay? And like Pepsi for like a hot minute tried to do an ad campaign based on that, like, no, be proud that we're serving Pepsi, but it didn't really catch on. So, but then again, neither did New Coke, and now Parker knows
all
about New Coke.
I've learned so much. This is why I show up to work every day, Pat, so that you can teach me about 1980s, 1990s pop culture.
Hey, there's always something we can learn. You know what I learned yesterday?
Huh.
I learned that Congressman Derek Van Orden came to Eau Claire last Friday. There wasn't a town hall. No, there wasn't any big announcement. Yeah. There weren't any protesters there because most people didn't know about it. Apparently, you had to be a member of the Eau Claire Chamber to hear about it. But there I am looking at the Leader Telegram. And the headline is, Van Orden talks about one big, beautiful bill with local businesses in Eau Claire. The story here is by Michael Bowman and says that Representative Derek Van Orden sat down with local business leaders at the Eau Claire Chamber of Commerce Friday for a discussion about blah, 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 blah. And, of course, then we get all the, you know, the positive things about it. We hear about these tax breaks and these investments. And then, of course, we've got Van Orden telling this lie, essentially, about it, saying, if we hadn't passed the one big beautiful bill, the majority of these companies here would be stuck with a 43.5% tax rate, which is devastating. That's not what was going to happen. And Congressman Van Orden knows this. So what was he talking about? Okay, we're back to the first Trump term and the first Trump tax giveaway, which again locked in all these corporate tax breaks. And then a few little tax breaks to the middle class, which had some people fooled like, oh, look, he's really looking out for me. The middle class tax breaks expired after a couple of years. The corporate tax breaks stuck around for the entire length of the bill. But that meant they were about to expire. Had they expired, yeah, all those corporate tax giveaways, they would have reverted back to what it was before the law. And of course, they would frame that as a big tax increase rather than going back to the way things were before Donald Trump gave you this big gift that all the rest of middle class America had to foot the bill for. So what happened? Well, Trump somehow got back in office again. And so they just picked up right where they left off. And Trump called it a one big, beautiful bill. And it was one big bloated boondoggle. And it continues to be so to this day. And once again, there are big corporate tax sweetheart deals in there and big tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires and little tax breaks for some folks in the middle class. And it won't last. But also in that bill are budget cuts. Huge budget cuts to Medicaid, to nutrition programs and other things. Do they kick in next week? No. No, they don't kick in until after next year's midterms. So that from now till then, Derek Van Orden and others can go around saying, you see, look, nothing's happened. Nobody's benefits have been cut because they kick in after the midterm. It's absolutely diabolical from a political standpoint, but they knew exactly what they were doing. In holding off on the painful parts, kicking in, of course, the tax breaks now, which only do what to the deficit? Boom. Just send the deficit right up into the stratosphere. Van Orden said, quote, the Democrats in the state of Wisconsin are saying that we cut Medicaid. In fact, in the one big, beautiful bill, because of vertically integrated government between the Republicans in the House and the Senate in D.C. and in the Senate and Assembly in the state of Wisconsin, we got an additional $1 billion a year for the state of Wisconsin for Badger Care. You can't make up a bigger lie than what they're saying. It's just a fact. And when the Democrats are fear-mongering with our seniors and those most vulnerable amongst us, I don't have a lot of time for it. Well, make time, Derek Van Orden, because here's the thing. We know what a lie that is. We know that the reason there's an extra $1 billion a year had nothing to do with you working alongside Governor Evers and securing that money. We know that it was big cuts that were coming to the states through this bill that forced Wisconsin legislators to act quickly to pass a budget before that axe came down from you, so that money could be raised to help make up for the big cuts in Medicaid that you voted for. And you can say till you're blue in the face that Democrats are fear-mongering and Democrats are lying, but you can't argue with the numbers. And the numbers ain't lying. The numbers tell us just how bad the cuts are going to be. The numbers tell us how bad it's going to be for rural hospitals. The numbers tell us how tax burdens are shifting away from your wealthy buddies and to your constituents. It's why there are three Democrats already wanting to run against Derek Van Orden next year. Why one of them, Becca Cook, is already getting some firepower coming in this week from members of Congress, including Bernie Sanders, who's coming into town at the end of this week, I believe. We're going to talk to Dan Schaefer about that later in this show. But underlying all of this for Congressman Van Orden is that he still doesn't have the guts to schedule a town hall. He's got to sneak in, just talk to the business community. I don't know what the email looked like. I get an email from the Eau Claire Chamber of Commerce that advertises events that are coming up. I went back and looked yesterday. I didn't see anything advertising a forum with Derek Van Orden. I could be wrong, but I went back and looked at several emails, and I saw nothing. Now, I'm not a dues-paying member of the Eau Claire Chamber, so I'm sure those folks get a different set of emails. And I am not casting aspersions on the Eau Claire Chamber. That is their right. They can do things for members only. My beef isn't with the Eau Claire Chamber. It's with Congressman Van Orden, who, you know what, while you're there, thanks for coming to Eau Claire, by the way. Glad you could still find it on a map. But maybe double up your pleasure in the Chippewa Valley. Yeah, have your nice, friendly chit-chat with some business leaders and give your spin however you want. Then do what I had to do and so many other people. Head over to DeLong Middle School or maybe to UW-Eau Claire. Maybe the Sonntag Center. Well, it's brand new. And maybe that'll hold enough of your constituents who want to have a few words with you about what you decided was worthy of our tax dollar investment, tax breaks for millionaires, and what was not worthy of our tax dollars. Healthcare, nutrition programs, a whole new generation of clean energy jobs, support for our farmers, getting them new markets, conservation programs for those new farmers throughout your district. Those were not priorities for you. Neither was holding a town hall to explain why you think it's such a good idea. You love popping off on social media, Congressman Van Orden. Hundreds and hundreds of tweets per month where you get to just talk at people. Kind of like I'm doing here. I get paid for this. But I get to tell Congressman Van Orden, I'm not an elected official. You are. I've been an elected official. I've held listening sessions. I've held over 100 of them. I know what that's like. Some days they're good. Some days they're not so good. But that's what you get with the job. Unless you are just so frightened of having people explain what a terrible thing you did in supporting Trump in 100% of the way. At no point did you stand up to Donald Trump the way that you said you would, saying you'd be an independent voice for the 3rd Congressional District. You didn't do that. So it's no wonder you're too afraid to debate Mark Pocan or debate anybody else about the job you're doing. You can't, which is why we had to find out about it and talk about it now, several days later. Today's history lesson is next. You're up north. Welcome back to our mornings powered by Up North News here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Coming up on Matt and Air on Air, right off the top at 9:05, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, candidate for governor in the 2026 election, will be joining Jane Matt and Air and Greg Bach. Also later, Sholly Pittman, Civic Media's news director, will talk about some of the stories that you might have missed from over the weekend. And then later today on the Maggie Dawn Show from 4 until 6 o'clock, there will be a discussion on opposing viewpoints, progressive Democrats versus centrist Democrats. And is it a case of versus, or is it a distinction without that much of a difference? Well, that'll be part of the discussion involving Maggie Dawn and guest co-host Matt Rothschild, who coincidentally is right here right now. Matt Rothschild joins us along with Maurice Estrano, And Marisa is from Deputy Director of, Deputy Director of Political Reform at New America. Matt Rothschild, of course, hosts the Wisconsin Forward podcast on the Civic Media Radio Network. And together, they recently co-authored an article that I saw in the Wisconsin State Journal that is titled Give Wisconsin Voters More Say Through Ballot Initiatives. Matt and Marisa, good morning to you both.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Hey, Pat. Good to be on with you.
Yeah, well, Matt, good to be on with you. You're the one that's on more often than me or any other host here. You're like Civic Media should be your middle name or something. Everywhere.
I'm paying rent here in the studio.
That's great. No, it's wonderful to have you here. So Matt, since you're the hometown fellow there, let's have you start, and then we'll go to Maurice after that about what prompted this column about ballot initiatives in Wisconsin.
Well, I got to give credit to Marisa. She reached out to me. She's been working on, and her organization's been working on, this idea of defending direct democracy, the right of citizens to go to referendum and pass a bill that they want to pass or overturn a bill that they don't like or amend the Constitution if they want to. I also, coincidentally, this is dear to my heart, I wrote a book a few years back called 12 Ways to Save Democracy in Wisconsin. And one of those chapters was Give Us Direct Democracy. So we decided to team up and write this little op-ed.
Well, then let's turn that over to Marisa as well. Marisa, tell us more about New America. And again, you know, the impetus for, you know, making this kind of a push for citizen initiative.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for teeing me up, Matt and Pat, too. Really appreciate you having us on to talk about this piece. So at New America, I work in the political reform program, in which we explore, do research, and try to socialize a whole swath of ideas for how to make our democracy work better for more people, in a nutshell. So sometimes that means reforming the way we do elections. Sometimes that means pioneering and supporting, lifting up new models of civic engagement, like citizens' assemblies. And we sort of have this gap between improving representative democracy and improving deliberative democracy, in which direct democracy kind of fit. And what we were thinking was that there are all these efforts underway by state legislatures across the country to roll back initiative and referendum powers, to restrict that process. And defense is happening, which is great. But what we're not seeing, we have not been seeing in decades, and in some ways over a century, is a real effort to expand access to citizen-led ballot measures like the initiative and the referendum to new states, because currently only half of U.S. states allow their citizens to petition to change laws, to put new ideas on the ballot, or to repeal existing laws, as Matt said before. So when we started scoping the landscape to see what activity was already happening within states to amend their constitutions, to establish a new process, to allow citizens this power, we realized there was very little happening. And much of that is because it doesn't feel possible. So what we did was we developed a methodology to evaluate a state's readiness to bring on a new process like this within the current very polarized, very nationalized, very difficult political landscape for reform. And we looked at different indicators, social, political, socioeconomic, civic indicators of a state's readiness for reform. And what we found was, and actually it sort of aligned with my initial expectations when setting out to do this project, that Wisconsin was the most promising candidate to come online, to be the first state to come online for many decades as the newest state and state with an initiative process. And that was exciting. And I connected with Matt through a mutual colleague. And I said, is this something that you might be interested in starting to talk about a little bit more? Like, what do you know about what's happening on the ground? And it just felt like there was a lot of synergy there. So we decided to say, you know, let's write something and see if we can kick up some interest and see if that can sort of nudge the issue a little bit forward. Again, there is some interest already, but we are just interested in seeing how far we can take it.
So Matt, in Wisconsin, what might that look like? And help folks understand maybe what it is they could do if the rules were changed. I mean, when I think at first blush, I can think of people not knowing, are they looking to change a law, a statute on the books, or are they looking to amend the Constitution? I mean, it's one thing to say we're going to have initiative and referendum, but, you know, where are the guidelines? What's going to help citizens to not only want to do this, but also use it efficiently?
Well, thanks for asking, Pat. Let me give you an example. Everyone listening, I'm sure, remembers 2011 and Scott Walker and Act 10 and the rollback of union rights here in Wisconsin. Well, a similar thing was tried in Ohio a couple of months after Walker did it here, and the people of Ohio rose up and said, no, we don't want to take away the rights of public sector unions in Ohio. And at that time, and they still do, have the power of referendum. And so they signed a petition. They got plenty of people to pass the threshold that you needed for petition signatures to get the referendum on the books, and said, we're going to roll back this thing that Kasich, the governor of Ohio, the Republican, passed through the legislature there. And essentially the people got a veto. So there was no successful assault on labor rights in Ohio. Ohio and Michigan have the right of referendum, binding referendum that the people can put on the ballot. In Michigan a couple years ago, a single individual started an initiative process to get on the ballot in Michigan the idea to ban gerrymandering. And that got overwhelming support, too. So they banned gerrymandering by referendum. It would be sweet if we could do that here, too.
Marisa, in terms of unintended consequences, and I'm not saying this is a reason not to do this, but are we then saying, if we start to open up this door to these kinds of citizen-led initiatives, that an electorate that is already weary of statewide campaigns for governor and U.S. Senate, and now statewide campaigns, you know, for Supreme Court justices have become so politicized, are we kind of opening the door to another wave of these, but this time with particular ballot issues? And how do we, can we do anything to make sure that those don't just become the next round of multi-million dollar, you know, political battles that leave voters unsure of what exactly they're voting on?
That's such a good point. Nobody is arguing that this is a perfect vehicle for achieving policy change. The initiative is what I like to call a kind of a pressure release valve. It's more of an in case of emergency when the legislature really isn't delivering on what the majority of the public wants, rather than a substitute for representative democracy. It's not perfect. It has become an extremely professionalized and expensive way to change policy. It does bring in a lot of money and a lot of unwelcome money into states. There's no secret about that. Most notoriously, we see that happen in California, which of course has a different political culture and is a, you know, has a zillion media markets within that drive up costs. But the bottom line is, it is expensive, and there's almost no way to avoid when you're dealing with salient issues like abortion protections, for example. There's almost no way to avoid the money. However, there are some ways to address the money question, one of which is to design a process such that citizens do not feel that they always need to take the amendment route, the constitutional amendment route. There are different types of initiative. One is you're changing a state statute. That usually has lower thresholds, so lower signatures. It costs less money to run those campaigns. Then there's the constitutional amendment route. That is more expensive. Citizens have been taking that option more and more and more unnecessarily in recent years because they fear legislative interference in the post-passage and implementation process. It feels more secure. So when you are thinking about bringing a process to a new state, you get to think about how to make the model work better. And we haven't had an opportunity like that in many, many, many moons. But if a new state like Wisconsin were to adopt its own process, it would have the opportunity to learn from what other states have done wrong, such as how to make it a little bit cheaper to run a campaign, how to make sure that the fiscal reviews that are performed are done by independent bodies. In terms of confusing ballot language, you should not need a postgraduate degree in order to decipher the language of a ballot measure.
Amen.
Right now, you do in many cases. And there are mechanisms that you can put in place to ensure that that language is easily, is intelligible, is legible to a general electorate, and also to ensure that there are voter guides that go out, you know, alongside your ballot or beforehand, so that people have other ways to learn about the ballot measure and the stakes associated with that measure.
And Matt, I feel like we are maybe simplistically killing two birds with one stone. But if I had the power to do this, I think the first thing I'd be pushing for would be some way to limit the amount or influence of money in Wisconsin politics.
Yeah, we got to solve that problem too. But this power of binding referendum is important. Look, we're not getting what we want in Wisconsin. The vast majority of people in Wisconsin want Medicaid expansion. They want legalized marijuana. They want more spending on public education. And we're just getting stymied time and time again by the logjam here in the Capitol. So let's give the people a little more power.
And so before we wrap up here, Marisa and Marisa Strano from New America, can you tell us a bit about the group and how people can learn more about New America?
Sure. We are a Washington, D.C. based think tank, and if you are interested in learning more about our democracy work generally or about this project specifically, you just go to newamerica.org/politicalreform. We have a new report that lays out our methodology. We have a list of lessons and takeaways from the history of ballot initiative adoption, which happened mostly during the progressive era, the early 20th century, and other tools. You can also email me. I'm easy to find on the website. And I'd be happy to talk to anybody in Wisconsin who's interested in learning more and taking this issue forward.
All right. And again, newamerica.org would be the address there. And Marisa Strano is the Deputy Director of Political Reform. And Matt Rothschild, of course, is everywhere, including on the Maggie Dawn Show later today, which, again, I hope you continue this conversation and this topic. It's a very important one, and gives citizens, you know, one more tool to feel like they're in charge of their democracy and not outside forces. Matt, thank you so much. We'll hear you this afternoon with Maggie. And Marisa, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
Thank you.
All right. Good to have you both. Have a wonderful day. And when we come back, some of you will have a local update. We'll be visiting here with Jimmy Cuska from Civic Media, talking about the Brewers and that franchise record 14-game winning streak before it got snapped yesterday. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Coming to you live from the studios of WFHR Radio in Wisconsin Rapids, where they are celebrating 85 years of community service. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Welcome back. Nice to have you on these mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to be joined by James Maloof here at WFHR in a little bit. Melissa Kay will be coming along as well to be part of our history lesson, as she always is on Wednesdays, except now she gets to do it in person. A reminder that if you can't catch the show live and would rather, you know, listen on demand or listen back at some point to an interview, the best way to do that is to simply, as I like to say, pod this program and head over to Spotify. You can do it on Apple as well and get yourself signed up to be a subscriber, follower. Doesn't mean you have to listen every day, but you're there, and we appreciate that so much. Again, Spotify, Apple to get your podcasts. But let's get back to the focus of today. Here's the center of it all right now. I mean, it's WFHR, but somebody has to be, you know, the personification of it. James, I guess that's you.
Yeah, lucky.
Let me turn your mic up here. Congratulations and happy. You don't look a day over 84.
First, it's really good to meet you, Matt. This is the first time you and I have had a chance to really talk or anything. So it's really good to meet you, and I appreciate you being here.
Here, slide on in here, and so that there we go. Otherwise, it has that look like. What was that old Tonight Show bit where the behind the other.
And, yes. Yeah,
we don't want to have that. Tell folks about yourself and your role here at the station.
James, I've been here. This is my second stint with WFHR. When I first started in radio about 22 years ago, I signed on when WFHR and WGLX, another classic rock station in the area, were tag teamed. And I actually got hired at the classic rock station. I was part-time and I was told that I had 30 days in radio. And that was about it, and to make a run of it and everything. So from there, I have been all over doing radio and stayed with the classic rock thing for a while. Came back here about 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when I did, Bob Look brought me back in, and a big shout out to him and appreciation to him, because this place has been a second home to me. Mm-hmm. With a skill set like mine, I don't have a whole lot of jobs that I can do. There's not a lot of things I could do. A lot. I work construction, all those things, but radio gave me a home. I didn't go to school for this. I'm an actor. I'm a writer. You know, I didn't know that I'd have a place. WFHR gave me that, especially this second run. So in this 9 years, in the time since then, one of the things that I've been very focused on is not only keeping the lights on, to be honest with you, before, you know, Heart of Wisconsin Media and then Civic buying us, we weren't really sure where we were going to go and what was going to happen. And most importantly for our staff, our listeners didn't know. And so, you know, they have supported this station for, you know, 85 years, and we want to do right by them. So my focus was that local. And then as I started talking with our station manager, Chuck, a little bit more about these things, and we started talking about the kind of radio that I can do, freeform, very open. I am not a trained interviewer, Pat. I am not as polished as you. I am not as polished as half the people here at Civic. But I can put my own spin on things. I can do my own thing, and I can somehow get accepted by this audience.
But that's really what it comes down to. I mean, in whatever form it took over the past 85 years, this station has been about local service in some way, shape, or form. And then sometimes it happens in a polished, professional manner. And back in the days when they had to wear tuxedos, for goodness sakes, to broadcast on the radio, to now, I mean, you're in the same Civic Media t-shirt we all get to wear. It's like a company uniform. Yeah. We all have that. Yes. And are able, like you said, freeform is frankly what I think it's that authenticity that people are looking for nowadays.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that the old standard, and nothing against, we're not here without the old standard of radio, right? And the trailblazers, the people that got us here and everything. Right. But the idea of it has to be like this from now on, we, you know, that's not what people listen to. They don't engage with that. They register more if you're having an open conversation. I tell my guests all the time on Rapid Support and anything, we'll get done doing something and they're kind of, I stumbled over this word. I said, no, that's good.
It's okay.
We want that. Yeah. That's all right. That's how people talk.
When we started with Up North News and Courier Newsroom, it was such an adjustment for me to make, starting with the most basic thing, having a TV background, I shoot everything horizontally. Yeah. And now everybody shoots things on their cell phones and it's vertically. And they said, that's what we want. Like, really? But you can't see the whole thing? Yeah, but that's what they want. They're watching on phones. And then it was, you know, I would put things on a tripod, you know, to keep the shot steady. Like, oh, no. People don't want steady. It looks too polished. To, yeah. You know, just hold the camera with your hand. And frankly, the same goes for radio. It's we've never quite embraced just being yourself more than we have in this day and age. But you get to do this. You do enjoy it. And, I mean, do you have one or two things that you look at your full career on and say, that was the kind of thing I enjoyed doing the most, or that was a moment that you enjoyed doing the most?
Wow. It's going to be a corny answer, mm-hmm. but early on, I got the chance to talk to, we had like, I think it was our 80th or 81st anniversary. And we, you know, we didn't really have the manpower that we had back now, yeah. And everything at the time. So we really, Pam, Chuck, and I, we really put together a bunch of interviews and bringing in a bunch of people from years past and everything. And as we started to collect more and more and more, we had like 20, 30 people from WFHR's past coming on the airwaves for us for like a week to celebrate. And just getting to talk to those people,
yeah.
Getting to do that. We lost a very important member of our team pretty early on when I came back, in Carl Hilke, who is one of the souls of this station, very one of the definitions of it. Getting to work with Carl in a light that he hadn't really gotten to do a lot. He did the morning show with me, and he hadn't gotten to, he did morning shows, but didn't, I don't think they tapped into his comedic ability very much. I had the chance to do that. I'm honored to have been able to work with him and be on the mic with him at the end there. It's a privilege.
And the thing is, it's not just Carl, but I mean, you look on the walls here, there are plaques honoring people who are in the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame. There have been famous, locally famous people, locally famous shows, Coffee Clutch being among them. So, I mean, I wouldn't dare ask you to sum up 85 years in one interview, but can you talk a bit more about some of those other famous names and famous shows? When people think of WFHR, what comes to mind?
If I can for a second, I work over at Second City, teach over there in Chicago a little bit. And on the way up to the second floor at Second City, there's this beautiful mural of Farley and Gilda Radner and Belushi and all the people who have passed. And it's really well done. And I tell my students all the time, I don't know how you walk past that and not get motivated, not get inspired, not get like, I get to do this for a living. I walk in every morning and I see those plaques, and I kid you not, every morning, man, I see those, and it's a motivator. It's a reminder of what we get to do here. Then there's a lot of people that could do this. There's a lot of people that would maybe want to do this job. We get to be here, you know, so making sure that you appreciate that. I think that when it comes to trying to keep going what they started in those original people and you know, people like Chuck's dad and stuff that really got this whole thing rolling, it's supporting this area. It's making sure that the audience comes first. It's knowing your audience. As a Chicagoan, not rambling about Chicago sports, actually they don't mind that, because I mean, we suck, so it's all right. When it comes to really covering this area, I think that the major thing that we do, or we can do especially, is especially when we have elections, when we have politics going on, we're able to bring our local representatives on. I speak with Senator Tested and Representative Krug once a month. Congressman Kine used to join us all the time. Mm-hmm. Getting to do that stuff, and when I'm talking to the community and they have ideas, anything like that, being a middleman for that, right. And being able to share that.
Yeah, and former state rep Katrina Shanklin will be joining us here at 8:30. You mentioned the Rapids Report. Tell folks a bit about what coverage is like today here at WFHR.
Tell Katrina hi for me. She's great. She's awesome. With the Rapids Report, it's kind of something that Carl started. And it's really something that I still don't feel like is my show. I just don't want to break the show. It's still his show. But for us, we get to have on local people, local representatives, different things like that, and interview them, be able to talk to them, get to know them a little bit more, get our audience to get to know them more. I think one of my favorite segments on there, we have a monthly visit with Sheriff Sean Becker. Mm-hmm. And Sean and I, between you and I, Pat, I have a little bit of a rocky past. So Sean knew me and my family long before I started the radio. But things change and people change. And when I first started working with Sean, I was very nervous about that. He could not have treated me, and to this day could not treat me better. And we have such an open dialogue. When he first started talking to us, it was around the George Floyd stuff. It was along those things. And we could have an open conversation right here in the middle of Wisconsin Rapids about that. The people that I have on that free form conversation, mm-hmm. it frees you up to be able to ask questions that might seem harsh or seem like, he's throwing a curveball at me or something like that. Like, no, this is something you would bring up in conversation.
Right. James, tell us about the festivities today, the parking lot party that's going on this afternoon.
There is so much that I need notes. I was like, I'm going to forget stuff. One of the things that we're looking forward to with this is being able to have families come down and kids come down. Something that's really important to all of us, I'm sure you too, is the next generation of radio and keeping this beautiful thing alive. We love radio. We want to keep it going. You need young people to do that. I think that our politicians could probably learn something from that, and having younger people be able to take over the guard. Amen. And everything. But that's a whole other story we could talk about some other time. With this today, one of my main focuses is the kids being able to come in, and Melissa does this amazing thing with working with them and kind of showing them a little bit of behind the scenes, how the sausage is made. They get to record themselves and hear themselves on there. And I can only imagine that the sparks that are going to get created from something like that. We have a sweet off we're doing.
Sweet off, as in desserts.
Yeah. Take this very seriously.
Not that the Norwegians are feeling left out. Not the sweet off. It's desserts.
Good. Yeah, we're doing that. Our bunch of our staff put together treats and stuff, and we're gonna have Milton Steele come in and guest judge it along with some of our listeners that come in. Milt is special for a lot of reasons. Was a longtime voice here and a great guy, but he's also in the face of our old cookbook.
Oh yes,
we're gonna put together a new cookbook, and combined with recipes from locals and everybody. We're looking forward to putting that together, and that's exciting. We have let's see, we're gonna have some food trucks down here. We're gonna have a little bit of that. We're gonna make sure to feed people, so bring your appetite. We're gonna have a bunch of our nonprofits down here, which is really one of the
wonderful,
the sneaky kind of cool things again, about doing something service, like this,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Being able to do that. One thing that I'm really proud about working at Civic, living in this area and this community, the ability to be able to a good cause and a good time, to be able to do both, to be able to swing that. That's on paper. That's not always easy to pull off. It seems like we do it all the time around here.
Yeah. I mean, James, you could not be a better ambassador for a station that, yes, it may not have been, you know, your stomping grounds originally, but you have truly made it your own. And the community has embraced you in return. So thank you so much for all you've done here, especially for Civic as well, as a relatively new owner. The station's been through several ownership changes over the years, as has basically every radio station. And I hope this one you guys find to be good stewards as well for keeping local news and talk and information and community service alive on the radio dial.
It's interesting how 85 years in that original message, and here we are with this company and Civic, and it's the same message. I couldn't be in a better play of hands.
Definitely so. James, thanks again very much. Have a great time. All right. Appreciate it. Take that. I'll let you. He's got another studio. He's got a whole thing to run over here, including those local cut-ins that get done as part of the Rapids Report that you can hear on WFHR. And again, a parking lot party going on from noon until 6 today. I mean, the food trucks, if nothing else, reason to come by and enjoy some treats, along with that sweet off. I'm glad we clarified. The Finns, too, they get very upset about leaving them out of things like this. Today's history lesson is on the way. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.